Family Services will now come to order. Today is Thursday, April 19th, and it's good to see people on time. Thank you guys so much for that. It's really great. What I'd like to do is to have Mr. Britton to give us today's agenda and start with the explanation of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, we have a lot of stuff to get done this afternoon and not a whole lot of time to do it. We're planning on doing work sessions on four bills. The first, House Bill 2201, Healthy Kids Program. At 1:45, we're trying to get to Senate Bill 1041, which is a bill related to the DHS rebalance. 1:50, public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 5525, the long-term care ombudsman's budget. And at 2:20, Senate Bill 1034, relating to nursing assistant or certified nursing assistant fees.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if you'd be kind enough to open a work session on House Bill 2201.
Open a work session on House Bill 2201. And members, as you would see your agenda, I would appreciate very, very much if we can stick to this agenda. One of the issues are that we lose members who are going on the trip to look at the ONC counties. And I promise you that if we can get through these four bills, we will not have to come back for evening session. So with your cooperation, I would appreciate that very, very much. Thank you. Mr. Britton.
Madam Chair, my thought on working on House Bill 2201 today is first to review a set of five questions that were asked at a public hearing here back in February, the end of February, when we heard this bill for the first time. And then to move in.
Mr. Britton, if you will excuse me. Please, I really, really forgot. I just want to remind the members and the public that this bill has had a public hearing back in February. It's been so long, I was just wondering if people remembered. And that we have discussed this bill with the membership before, so I don't want anybody to feel as if that we're just going to work session without having had a public hearing. And so that we've had. Thank you very much, Mr. Britton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first part would be to respond to some questions that committee members had about the Healthy Kids Program. The second thing would be to review two simple spreadsheets that I have prepared for you, and Eric will be handing those out in a moment. And the third thing is to actually go over the amendments each. And with your pleasure, Madam Chair, we could take a motion for each amendment as we go through it.
Well, that's comfort for you. Shall we just go through and do all of the amendments? Okay, nobody says anything, so we'll go amendment by amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There were five questions back on February 28th that I wanted to respond to, and I have done so. The first question had to do with durational residency requirements. This is in the engrossed version of the bill, and you'll see that one of the amendments removes that durational residency requirement. This was deemed as not being able to stand a constitutional test by legislative counsel. And Senator Gordley, you had asked for that memo, and I believe I gave that to you some time ago.
Thank you.
The second question had to do with revenue projections beyond the 09-11 biennium from Representative Morgan. I provided you with a copy of LRO's projection of revenue. The net revenue is about $182 million in 2007-09, $233.8 in 09-11, and in 2011-13, net revenue from these increase in taxes is about $229.6 million. Representative Morgan also asked a question about some of the barriers. The reasons why an estimated 60,000 uninsured children who could qualify today for health coverage within the Department of Human Services aren't currently enrolled. And Dr. Goldberg responded to that question. I think I gave you, Representative Morgan, a copy of that memo, and I may have given it to others on this subcommittee as well. Representative Nathanson had a question of Ms. Kelly Seal in the governor's office about the Department of Revenue's money. They estimated a fiscal impact from this bill at about $1.7 million. Ms. Kelly Seal sent you, Representative Nathanson, and me an email in response to your question, and she states that she learned from the director of the Department of Revenue that, in fact, the entire $1.7 million is specifically going to the Department of Revenue to support the staff they would need to enforce the tax increase. In the fiscal analysis DOR recently submitted to the Legislative Fiscal Office, they proposed to add 6 Department of Revenue positions to manage additional work created by the changes in the cigarette and the other tobacco products taxes. They would also use some of the money for services and supplies, primarily for new stamps and for monitoring and billing internet purchases. The last question came from Senator Bates, and he had concerns about the nurse's advice line that is added in the A-engrossed version of House Bill 2201, whether there would be a liability to DHS. Ms. Lynn Reed from the department responded to my question about this. DHS contracts with McKesson Health Solutions for disease management services, including a 24-hour telephone advice line. Our review and assessment of the contract is that there are sufficient protections and liability insurance sections in place in the contract to protect the state of Oregon. So those are responses to your questions about the Healthy Kids program back on February 28th.
Are there further questions on the questions that you had sent in, Representative Morgan?
Well, I don't know where you're going with this, but what my concern and my confusion is that we're now bouncing off of the co-chair's budget, which didn't exist when we took this bill up last time. And so we have no relevant information about the financing of it relative to the way the co-chairs have put it in their budget. And I'm wondering if there's going to be information introduced.
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I'll respond to that.
Thank you.
I'd ask Eric, please, to hand out the first spreadsheet that I put together for you. As I mentioned a moment ago, Madam Chair, I've prepared 2 spreadsheets to go through this bill as carefully as I can with you. As you well know, this bill really does 2 basic things. It raises revenue in the form of tobacco taxes, both cigarette and other tobacco products taxes, and it also allocates those funds to various programs, and it creates, among those, is the Healthy Kids program, which you've heard about before, both when the Department of Human Services presented their budget as well as when the Office of Private Health Partnerships presented their budget. The handout that I want to go through has been given to you now, and I want to go through the first line, line by line. The first line shows the gross new tobacco tax from the 84.5 cents per pack increase, as well as an increase to 95% of the wholesale price for other tobacco products. You can see that in 2007-09, the estimate is about $218.6 million. From that, on line 2, I've removed the $1.7 million going to the Department of Revenue, and this was directly related to the question that Representative Nathanson had. You can see then on line three is simply the difference there, $216.9 million in gross new revenue tax net of Department of Revenue costs. Line four shows the LRO estimate of the loss in current tobacco tax revenue because of reduced consumption, about $36.3 million in 07-09. Then line five is the net increase in tobacco tax revenue, simply 216.9 less 36.3. And this is the number, or approximately the number, that has been circulating around the building with respect to tobacco tax revenue increase. This is, in other words, a net tobacco tax revenue increase. The bill, however, uses the net of DOR costs to calculate a variety of allocations. That's why I've repeated on line six the gross new tobacco tax net of DOR costs. Lines 7, 8, 9, and 10 are percentages of that gross new tobacco tax net of DOR cost, and they are all found in Section 20 of the A engrossed bill. The first two lines, 7 and 8, are an attempt to hold harmless or to compensate current tobacco tax recipients. The first is under ORS 323-455, second under ORS 323-457. They total, lines 7 and 8 in 07-09, total about $42.3 million. So you can see that they more than offset the line 4, $36.3 million. The current tobacco tax recipients include the general fund, the Oregon Health Plan, the Tobacco Use Reduction Account, cities, counties, and senior and elderly transportation fund. So again, in 07-09, those entities are held more than harmless, but if you look over in 09-11, the 18.8 on line 7, along with the 37.6, about gets you to a wash with respect to line 4, which is a loss of current tobacco tax revenue of $56.6 million. Line 9 shows the effect of the A25 amendment, 1.09% to the Rural Health Revolving Account, again from the gross new tobacco tax, $2.4 million. A37 amendment on line 10 is 2.874% to the Department of Human Services for safety net clinics from the gross new tobacco tax, an estimate of about $6.2 million. You can see that those changes, or the amounts in 09-11 amount to about $3.2 million and $8.3 million. These total, lines 7, 8, 9, and 10, total about $50.9 million. Line 12 shows the amount that is left after the initial distribution. Again, this is new tobacco tax net of the distributions in lines 7 through 10. About $166 million is left. The A-39 amendment, which we'll be discussing in a moment, allocates those funds, that $166 million, in two ways. About 5.173% to the tobacco use reduction account in 07-09, 10% of that would be going to the tobacco use reduction account in 09-11. Finally, line 14 shows that 94.827% of that amount would go to the Healthy Kids Program Fund in 07-09, 90% of it to the Healthy Kids Program Fund in 09-11. So that the total remaining distribution equals the amount left after the initial distribution. Lines 15 and 12 are equal. So this shows you a little bit about the revenue side. I'll get to the expenditure side with the next handout that Eric will be making.
Other questions of Mr. Britton? Representative Morgan?
Mr. Britton, was there anything done to illustrate what's going to happen in 11-13 on the revenue side?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I haven't prepared a similar sheet for 11-13, no. Mr. Malik gave you, or I gave you, a copy of his that shows the net amount of money. Those would be on line 5, the 180.6, the 232, and then I believe it was, if I can find it, Representative Morgan.
Is it this display that you're referring to?
Yes, about 229.6. That's the net revenue.
So the net revenue actually decreases from 09-11 to 11-13?
That's my understanding, yes, Representative Morgan.
Thank you.
Members, I'd like to continue with the spreadsheet that Mr. Sorensen just handed out. This shows the expenditure side, if you will, for the Healthy Kids program, as well as other components of House Bill 2201. The first box has to do with Healthy Kids, and this is in millions of dollars, as was the other spreadsheet. It shows on line 1 what was included in the governor's recommended budget for the Healthy Kids program. There was about $56 million in the Department of Human Services and about $22.6 million in the Office of Private Health Partnerships.
Oh, excuse me just for a moment. Representative Hanna, would you like to join us?
Thank you.
I included the Department of Revenue on this spreadsheet. However, that $1.7 million is made prior to any allocation to Healthy Kids. It's made right off the top, exactly the way it was displayed on the revenue spreadsheet that I just reviewed. But I put it on here to remind subcommittee members that there is a cost associated with the Department of Revenue of $1.7 million. Department of Justice in the governor's recommended budget had no funding through this, and neither did the Department of Administrative Services. Over on the far right, you can see the total. The governor's recommended budget for Healthy Kids was about $78.6 million. Then I've listed a series of adjustments that have changed the governor's budget. The first line shows an addition of funding for the Office of Health Policy and Research to do an evaluation of the Healthy Kids program. That money had inadvertently been left out of the Department of Human Services. It is added here so that you can see it. It's about $350,000. Line 3 transfers that $350,000 along with money that was included in the Office of Private Health Partnership for an evaluation of the Healthy Kids Plan. And you can see over on the far right, almost the far right, the Department of Administrative Services adds that $700,000, it's actually $650,000, so that the Office of Health Policy and Research will be able to do an evaluation of this program. Line 4 shows a Department of Justice fiscal impact of about $100,000. This was not in the governor's budget. But when we, the Legislative Fiscal Office, asked for fiscal impacts for this bill, they produced about $100,000 fiscal impact. Apparently related to child support, their thinking is that as this program expands, there may be some impact to their child support program. That is, more people may also be aware of the child support program. About $100,000.
Madam Chair? Representative, I'm sorry, yeah, Kotek. Thank you. Mr. Britton, so they're saying they need $100,000 extra for enforcement?
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, that isn't what it appeared to be. it appeared to be a woodwork effect, and that is the more people that know about the Healthy Kids program, the more people would know about the child support program. And I would add that I'm not necessarily convinced of that. I asked my colleague who has the Department of Justice what he thought of it, and we have to do a little digging on that. My point, however, is that this is a possible cost from this program. Line 5 shows the fiscal impact of the A26 amendment, which we'll be discussing in a moment, about $1.9 million. This is an amendment that would require the Department of Human Services to contract with safety net clinics, community health clinics, in the event that a child who was enrolled in Healthy Kids was already receiving services from those clinics. The intent of that amendment is to maintain kind of a continuity of care for those particular children. Line 6 is a reduction from the original bill, not 2201A, but the original bill to 2201A, which reduced the top eligibility income level from a federal poverty level from 350% down to 300%. The entire effect, of course, is in the Office of Private Health Partnerships, because they are responsible for a commercial insurance product for children who are in households with incomes above 200%. So there is a reduction there of $2.3 million. When they calculated that, the Office of Private Health Partnerships also found an error in their original budget. Line 7 shows an Office of Private Health Partnership match correction on administration. So that reduced their cost by another $900,000. The largest adjustment is on line 8, and this was a clarification of what legal residency or a legal residency requirement for eligibility into the Healthy Kids program meant. We discussed this at length with the Legislative Council, and this is a requirement that was put in to create the A engrossed version of this bill. Council responded to our questions as to what legal residency meant by saying this meant either a United States citizen or a child who had legal documentation. In the governor's budget was included a fair amount of unmatched tobacco tax money to cover all children, regardless of their citizenship status. But adding this legal residency requirement would say, in essence, that children who do not have documentation would not be eligible for the Healthy Kids program. That reduced the tobacco tax cost in DHS by about $18.3 million, about $1 million in the Office of Private Health Partnerships. The A engrossed version of the bill also adds a nurse access line, and the cost is estimated to be about another $1.1 million. So the total adjustments over on the far right are a reduction in tobacco tax costs. This does not show you the federal funds. It's just simply the state funding of about $19 million from the governor's recommended budget for the Healthy Kids plan. So line 11 shows the new costs or fiscal impacts, if you will, for each of these entities. Department of Human Services, about $40.7 million. Office of Private Health Partnership, about $18.1 million, and so on. Total costs, $59.6 million. Line 12 is from the first spreadsheet that I showed you. It shows the new tobacco tax allocated to the Healthy Kids Program Fund, and this assumes that the A39 amendment is adopted and used in that allocation, $157.4 million. The amount remaining in the Healthy Kids Program Fund would be about $97.8 million. Now, to your question, Representative Morgan, in the co-chair's budget, that $97.8 million is not spent. And that's different from what was in the governor's recommended budget. That money, the amount remaining after the Healthy Kids program had been funded and the tobacco use reduction account had been funded, was used for funding in addition to the OHP standard program. It was used to backfill general fund within the Citizen Alien Waived Emergency Medical Program, and it was used for some other items as well. It is not used in those ways in the co-chair's budget. And if that budget was ultimately the one that the legislature passed, this $97.8 million would remain in the Healthy Kids program fund for use in future biennia. The other components of House Bill 2201 are all things that you saw on the first sheet. These are distributions of the gross tax after the Department of Revenue costs. Line 14 again shows the A37 amendment effect distribution to safety net clinics of $6.2 million, A39 tobacco use reduction account in 2007-09, $8.6 million, and the A25 distribution to the rural health revolving account, $2.4 million.
Questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Britton, I know you don't have the match on here, but what's the total fund?
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, I don't know off the top of my head. I would say this, though, that the match must be pretty close to what it was in the governor's recommended budget.
I don't think so.
Because what's being, again, the largest cost that's being removed here is for children who are not documented, and those were unmatched funds. Mm-hmm. All the rest of these funds were matched either at the Medicaid level or most likely the CHIP match rate.
Representative Morgan.
Again, Madam Chair, questions around the costs in the outlier years. That this covers the 07-09 biennium, but I am curious about what happens in terms of roll-up for the cost of the program in the 09-11 and 11-13. And it seems to me, just without looking at any information, that once the program is fully implemented in 07-09, or rather in 09-11, from then on you will have a steady rate of enrollment, theoretically, or not as growing as quickly as it will be as the program's implemented, but you'll have the ordinary inflationary costs that are reflected in healthcare programs all over, all the healthcare programs that we offer. And I think it would be good information for this committee to have to see how those, theoretically, if you're doing the right job with the TURA money, this should be a declining revenue source, and you have a an area of service provision where you have a pretty high roll-up cost. So I'm just curious about how those two lines relate to each other as you look at the sustainability of the program into the future.
One of the things, Representative Morgan, that we tried to do was to be consistent and constant in terms of asking LFO to look at 07-09, which is the next two years, and then to look at 09-11. As you know, in Oregon, our economic forecasting is pretty conservative, and we live in such a volatile state that I didn't ask them to go out to 11-13, just to go 07-09-09-11.
And if I might respond to that, I appreciate the uncertainty that you get into the further out in time that you look. But I think that we do have the ability to, based on past performance, for inflationary costs for healthcare programs, which are large, And we also have the ability to gauge the impact of this large increase of funding that we're going to put into tobacco cessation issues, and that I just have very large concerns over the direction that those lines are going to be moving in. And I know that you are very well aware, and a lot of the people on this committee were people that served in this session during the 0103 time, when we actually had to take those services back from people in order to mitigate for the financial situations that we were in. And being able to at least anticipate what that discussion is going to be two bienniums down the road, I think is a very valuable process for this body.
I understand.
Madam Chair, if I could interject something. Our fiscal impact statement will show the effect at least for 09-11. It is not shown on here. You're correct.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the consideration of thinking about what are we doing for the long term, looking at whether a program is sustainable or what the costs are going to be. It also occurs to me, though, that there are certain things we are either doing or considering doing, making additional investments in prevention or earlier treatment that not only in theory but are demonstrated to reduce costs, you know, within a few years or over the long term. For example, if there are things we can do with nutrition or improving our immunization rate for infants, or even reducing the amount of smoking in the household, does it mean that costs then to take care of kids for problems related to diabetes or asthma or other chronic illnesses, in theory, those costs should also be reduced if we step up to the plate and increase our investments in those preventive programs.
Point on.
Madam Chair, thank you. I know we're on a tight schedule time-wise, but I want to make a few statements real quickly. No matter what we do with this bill, if we don't change the basic way we deliver health care in this country, I don't care what program you look at as far as health care is concerned, we are not going to be able to afford it in 2 to 4 to 6 years, not just as any of them. We are thinking, when we look at this, very myopically. We are not thinking of the overall picture in health care. This is one silo. When you're keeping your thinking in this silo, you've got to go past that silo. The most important thing in this bill, actually, is the reduction of cigarette smoking. The number one thing we can do preventively to lower health care costs is to stop people from smoking cigarettes. It's the biggest thing you've got out there. $3 to $4 per pack of cigarettes is the cost of the entire system. $3 to $4 a pack. If you calculate into this what this saves the entire system with this reduced consumption of cigarettes, this is a huge winner. A huge winner financially and health-wise. What's the best way we can use the tobacco tax besides driving down consumption? What's the lowest hanging fruit? What's the most important thing we can do? Insure kids. It's real simple, folks. Insure kids. And when you get caught in this conversation about, in this particular silo, it's not paying for it, you're in the forest, you're in the trees in the forest, you're not seeing what's going on outside. You've got to step back and see the whole forest here. And to do that, you've got to be able to look at the entire system. What does consumption of cigarettes do as far as the entire Medicaid program is concerned? What does it do to a cost of cost shift that goes on for commercial? What does it do to the Medicare system when people smoke cigarettes? I face that issue every day as a physician, getting people to quit smoking. It is the biggest driver of health care costs. This drives down consumption of cigarettes. If you were to calculate that back into this entire picture, you'd have entirely different numbers. You just take one little silo of cigarettes and kids, take cigarettes in the whole picture and see if you save the whole system. This is a winner.
Further discussion? Mr. Bidner,
at this point, Madam Chair, if we could hand out the First Amendment, Amendment 20A24. Mm-hmm. Madam Chair and members, the A24 amendment does a couple of things. First, it says that the Department of Human Services, rather than the Office of Private Health Partnerships, will adopt verification requirements to ensure the recipients of benefits in the Healthy Kids program are legal residents. The A. N. Gross version has OPHP doing that function. The program was designed to have the Department of Human Services determine eligibility, and so this makes a change and has the department using those verifications to ensure that recipients of benefits are legal residents. The second thing that it does, the deletions on page 5, deleting lines 27 through 33, deletes the durational residency requirement, which the Legislative Council does not believe would stand up to a constitutional challenge.
Discussion?
Madam Chair? Mr. Whitman, could you describe to us what the process is going to be that DHS is going to go through?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I think the Department and also the Office of Private Health Partnerships talked a bit about that. This would be a similar eligibility process that they use today for the children who come to them seeking Medicaid or CHIP benefits. Remember that the Department's program is simply an outreach program to get more children to avail themselves to the current CHIP program and Medicaid program. There is a slight expansion from 185% up to 200%, but the eligibility process that's used today would be one that's similar for this program as well.
So this is a change in the process that was described in the original bill. And what I'm curious about is what the impact this will be on the implementation of the bill, because I recall language that it is time-consuming and often very difficult to get the verification documents. And so I'm wondering if there is an impact on the rate at which children will be able to be enrolled in this and whether that's been examined.
Well, Madam Chair, there may well be. I would point out that in the DHS budget, there is money for the children, adults, and families part of the budget, which is the eligibility work. So there is a cost to that, and there's a cost to having more applications being reviewed, for sure.
But there's been no quantification of that or no impact that, on the rate at which children would be able to be enrolled in the program?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I'm not certain of that. I would say that today children have to, in order to receive Medicaid and CHIP match, have to be found United States citizens in order to qualify for that federal matching funds. So this is not, to my mind, a change in the way eligibility would be conducted. It's simply correcting something that got added to the A. N. Gross version, which was a switch to have the Office of Private Health Partnerships adjudicate eligibility as opposed to the Department.
Okay, but I'm still confused. If I might just seek additional clarification.
You may.
Okay. The original bill had no limitation for children to sign up to it. Then there was an amendment in the bill, which I believe is in the A. N. Gross bill, that said there was a durational requirement. And now there's an amendment being introduced that takes out the durational requirement and puts in a legal resident requirement. Have I got that part figured out right?
Madam Chair, Representative Morgan, you do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We wanted to deal with the constitutionality of this issue.
No, I'm not trying to get to the constitutionality. I'm trying to get to the what these changes in the residency requirements, the qualification requirements, have done to the rate at which children can be processed.
I hope is that, Sean, thank you very much. I hope is that when we get to the amendment, what safety net clinics are, and they play such a vital role in our state, that what we will do is to, the high numbers of kids that are coming into the system will be handled through safety net clinics, and therefore it would be limiting the amount of time that it would cost for DHS to go through for the services, because through safety net clinics already much of that information is requested.
Okay.
I want to add to that, unless you have questions.
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, the costs went down because of the addition of the legal residency requirement.
Yes, I understand that.
Right.
But my question still stands, was that taken into account in the program's rate to absorb the enrollees? Let's move on.
Madam Chair, thank you. If I could help out here. They had to assume the methodology that they're having to employ because of the Deficit Reduction Act for Medicaid match. And my understanding is that has been assumed in the costing assumptions for this, because we're not adding the children that are... What we're doing here is we've excluded some children in a way, so we haven't changed the original population that already had to go through that. So my understanding is the costing assumptions included the administrative need to do the to do all of that. So I think the assumptions
but
on take up
the universe.
True. So, but I don't think they already have mechanisms in place to do this for the existing population, and so. I guess I didn't see that they're going to have to do anything differently than they're already having to do to get the Medicaid match. And I'm assuming that when they made the estimates, that those assumptions were taken into account.
Same question. Further comments? Thank you.
We do accept a motion, Madam Chair.
I will.
Madam Chair, I move the A24s into House Bill 2201.
Senator Westman moves the Dash 824 amendments to House Bill 2201. Are there any objections? Representative Garrard, Representative Morgan. Thank you. Has objections. Let the record show. Thank you, Susan. Let the record show. 824 has been adopted. Mr. President?
The A25 amendment, Eric, could you hand that one out, establishes the Rural Health Revolving Account, and it allocates 1.097% along the lines exactly of what you saw earlier on the revenue page to this particular account. That's about $2.4 million in 2007-09, $3.2 million in 2009-11. It also describes the purposes of the awards that would be made from the Office of Rural Health down in Section 29 of this amendment, or this amendment describes how Section 29 of the bill would change. Office of Rural Health may award to rural health care providers grants that promote any of the following goals: replacement or renovation of aging rural hospitals, modernization of capital equipment, preservation of access to local health services in rural areas. And there are some others listed at the top of page 2 of this particular amendment.
Discussion?
What is constitutes rural in this?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I'm not certain.
This is one that we had no discussion. I don't recall discussing this amendment at all. And so I'm just curious about what is considered to be rural.
I think we use the definition that OPH came to be.
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, my suspicion, I don't know this for a fact, but my belief is that it is defined in a statute that relates to the Office of Rural Health, which is located in the Oregon Health Sciences University.
Madam Chair.
Representative, excuse me, Senator Bates.
Thanks for the temporary promotion.
The Office of Rural Health has actually several different definitions for what rural health is, but the most commonly used one is the one that's set up by the federal government, and it's pretty well prescribed. It's one that we used recently to benefit the Myrtle Point, Roseburg area, in determining whether or not we were going to continue the subsidy for the medical malpractice for physicians and nurse practitioners there. It's well laid out. It's one that I think is very acceptable to most people. There's not much discussion on it anymore. There are some slight nuances that are different, but it's the Office of Rural Health does an excellent job of making those decisions, and I don't think it's something we should be worried about from the point of view of misuse here. Now, the problems we had before in this area were unsafe, or other agencies tried to make that decision without the right criteria and knowledge of what was going on. The people in the Office of Rural Health are very good about this. They know exactly what they're talking about and can give you basically a definition that is acceptable to everyone. And I'm assuming, and I think it's absolutely correct, they'll use the federal needs one that is very explicit and lays out very tight lines of what areas are considered rural as far as health is concerned.
Any discussion?
Go
ahead.
Just for further clarification, if I might, is it based on population or income?
It's usually based on a combination of five different factors, and they actually rate them on a scale of 1 to about 100. And the need area is dropped in the area of about 50 to 60, and I can bring that all to you if you'd like to see it later time. It's very well done. It's it's fairly complex, as it should be. And it's factors like what's the population being served as far as number of physicians and nurse practitioners, what's the payer mix in that area, what's the level of poverty, what's available in those areas, and there's five different criteria for it, and then they cross-reference that to a scale. And when you lay that out in a map, then you look at it and basically say, hey, this makes sense. Burns is rural.
One thing that does not include North Northeast Portland.
It doesn't.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am indeed.
Madam Chair, I move the A25.
Before you make your motion, can I ask one more question?
I
should be talking to the chair.
Madam Chair, before...
I was going to say, we have a new chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Senator Bates, the criteria that was used for the malpractice insurance, that program that helped defray that cost, was that the same definition of rural health that this one is?
I would assume that the new one that you'll be seeing coming in, the criteria was used the first time around for that for the last 4 years. That criteria is no longer being used for some very obvious reasons. It wasn't done by the Office of Rural Health.
So that's some different...
That was a different thing. The Office of Rural Health are the experts in this field. Not those that people really count on, do the job right. And so that's why I have confidence in their ability to really define rural health appropriately. I don't want to cast aspirations on the other agency in the state, but the one that made the original decisions on the supplement program for MedMal for rural doctors was not the one that we're going to use this time. I'll just leave it that way.
Thank you.
Let's say mistakes were made and have been rectified.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wessler?
I move the A25s into House Bill 2201.
Senator Wessler moved A25 amendments to House Bill 2201. Are the objections? Representative Garrard?
Let the record show the Representative Garrard.
Madam Chair, the next amendment that Eric will hand out is the A26 amendment. This amendment requires the Department of Human Services managed care organizations, the ones that with whom they contract, to subsequently contract with federally qualified health clinics. In the event that those clinics are serving an enrolled child in the Healthy Kids program. And again, I spoke to this a moment ago. The intent here was to provide a continuity of service for children who have already been receiving services through a community health clinic. And that is found on page 3 of this amendment.
discussion? Representative Morgan?
Madam Chair, I'm beginning to think that I'm dominating this discussion here, but we did have a kind of a protracted discussion around the capacity of the system to absorb the numbers of children that were going to be brought into the program, especially in the rural areas. And I would just bring forward that I haven't seen any information that really answers the questions that we raised in that area, that we've heard a lot of talk about the need to get more health workers trained, but in a program that's going to be implemented in the short term, I'm not sure that training more health workers is really going to solve the problem or fix the issue. And I would just put that out there as one of the kind of, in my mind, unexplored regions of this bill.
Right. Representative Morgan's one of the things that give me some comfort here, and I think I'm right in this, is that when Mr. King came before us, and if I'm wrong, you can correct me now, that most of the kids that we are going to be seeing in the Healthy Kids Plan are basically in the already signed up with the state. Am I right in that, Mr. King, in quoting you, that...
Hot seat time.
That most of the kids
My name is Rocky King. I'm the administrator for the Office of Private Health Partnerships. And the question, Madam Chair, is...
When you hear somebody ask about the numbers of kids coming into the system, because it appeared to be so many, and I thought I heard you say that most of the kids that would basically come into the system, most of them are already in the system in terms of Healthy Kids.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't recall quite answering that way, but okay. I think what we talked about was these kids are getting services at a variety of places now, whether it's the emergency room, whether it's the rural clinics, whether it's safety net clinics. They may not be at the right place for the right particular condition or intervention they need, but they're out there. But we also talked about there is a variety of healthcare workforce initiatives that I believe that the legislature and some committee, and maybe Dr. Smith can help me on this, I don't know, but there are a variety of initiatives looking at the workforce issues around healthcare. It is a critical issue. It's one that runs parallel with trying to get people covered. So I don't see it as an objection. I see it as a parallel issue that needs to be discussed and debated and figure out how we're going to do it the best way.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to mention that it appears to me this amendment, which is providing some clarification on what's meant by a community health center, I just wanted to express my appreciation for acknowledging not only the safety net clinics, but also the school-based clinics, which I think are a terrific and necessary component of this.
Thank you.
Just a quick answer to the question, if I could.
You may.
Capacity is there already. We're going to shift that capacity from inappropriate use of emergency rooms to primary settings, whether they be in fairly qualified health centers or safe net clinics or individual offices. What this amendment does is tell a child who's been receiving its care or her care at a safety net clinic that you don't have to change doctors and go somewhere else now. This allows them to stay where they're at with their medical home they have and not shift them over. We don't want to have that kind of disruption in the system. This is really sort of a fix to the bill, and I appreciate it being brought forward. The capacity is there. It's in the wrong place, the wrong time. It's late in illness. It's expensive. The capacity needs to be shifted back to primary care. That's what this bill, not this amendment, but this entire bill does. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ready for an amendment? Madam Chair, I move the -26 amendment into House Bill 2201.
Senator Westland moves the House, moves the -26 amendments and to House Bill 2201. Any objections?
A26.
You're right. Any objections?
Madam Chair, the next amendment Eric will hand out is the A37 amendment. The A37 amendment establishes a Healthy Kids Safety Net Fund. with 2.874% of the gross new tobacco tax funds net of the Department of Revenue costs. The estimated amount here in 2007-09 is about $6.2 million, $8.3 million in 2009-11.
Discussion? Again, Madam Chair, I don't have objection to the mechanics of the amendment, the setting up of the funds, but I do have grave concerns over the long-term stability of the program.
Thank you. Are there objections to... I'm sorry.
The motion.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 37s into House Bill 2201.
Senator Westfield moved 837 amendments into House Bill 2201. Any objections?
Madam Chair and members, the last amendment is the A39 amendment. As I discussed with you before, this would allocate the remaining funds after the allocation from the gross new tobacco tax to the Tobacco Use Reduction Account and the Healthy Kids Program Fund. The current bill has a split of 10% going to the Tobacco Use Reduction Account, 90% to the Healthy Kids Program Fund. This has changed now to 5.173% going to Tura, 94.827% going to the Healthy Kids Program Fund in 2007-09. This distribution is changed in the 2009-11 biennium to 10% going to the Tobacco Use Reduction Account, 90% going to the Healthy Kids Program Fund.
Discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I have no objection to the construction of the amendment. I recall in one of the earlier hearing that we had on the bill, Representative Johnson came in and asked for some additional information on the TURA advertising contracts to do with the how the money was dispensed in terms of the just how much went to advertising and how much went to overhead and commissions and that kind of thing. And I was wondering if that information was ever returned to the committee.
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, I don't know that it was or wasn't.
Thank you.
I will have to check.
Further discussion?
Madam Chair, I move the dash 39 amendments into House Bill 2201.
Senator Wilson moved dash 39 amendments, A dash 39 amendments, into House Bill 2201. Are there objections? Seeing none?
Madam Chair, we need a motion to take 2201 as amended, or 2201A as amended, to the full committee with a D-pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2201A as amended to the full committee with a D-pass recommendation.
Senator Wilson moves House Bill 2201A as amended to the full committee with a D-pass recommendation. Discussion?
Objections.
Representative Gerard, Representative Morgan, so objections.
That's okay.
Oh, well, you're hearing up. I am so sorry.
No, I just want to thank Mr. Britton for doing all the crunching of the new numbers.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's close the
work
session.
I'd like to close the work session on House Bill 2201 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1041. Mr. Britton.
Madam Chair and members, waiting for Eric to hand out a copy of Senate Bill 1041. We talked about this bill the other day when we when you approved the department's rebalance bill. This bill, 1041, simply repeals Section 9 of House Bill 3108 from last session. That bill allowed the department to make 4 reductions to the Oregon Health Plan, including over-the-counter drugs that are used for below-the-line services, a reduction to dental benefits, a reduction to 18 days maximum for hospitalization, and the elimination of vision benefits. As you know, the rebalance includes about $2 million of general fund to take care of the fact that these reductions were never implemented. This bill makes it all legal.
Is there further discussion on Senate Bill 1041, Representative Morgan?
So are we to assume then that these services are continued in the co-chair's budget?
Madam Chair and Representative Morgan, almost all, they are all with one exception, and that is that in the governor's recommended budget, over-the-counter drugs below the line are not reimbursed starting January of 2008, and the co-chairs made no change to that reduction in the governor's budget.
Further discussion?
Okay. Are you ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1041 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westman moves Senate Bill 1041 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there objections? Seeing none.
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't get a chance to say what I was going to say.
So what happens now? You feel okay after the fact?
What's that?
You feel the motion I just carried.
I was going to object to it, and I was just thinking in my head about how I was going to voice my objections, and you dropped the gavel. So please forgive me.
I'm sorry. Let's reopen the motion by which we just passed Senate Bill 1041 for further discussion. Is there an objection to reopening Senate Bill 1041? We reopen Senate Bill 1041 for the purposes of discussion. Representative Morgan.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I really appreciate you indulging me on this one. I will be a no vote on this because we haven't yet had an opportunity to talk about the budget for 07-09, and I think that absenting that discussion, that continuing these programs in that light is not... I think that we need to be... have a bigger fiscal picture than this allows us to have right now. So I'll be a no vote on it.
Okay, but let the record show we did have lengthy discussion on Senate Bill, on the budget for 07-09 when the two members of this committee, Mr. Britton and Ms. Baker, sat before us to discuss the budget.
And if I could, Madam Chair, this bill deals only with the 0507 biennium, and this is, I think, an issue for additional consideration when we get to the 0709.
I agree, and my point is that I have concerns about putting funding into this without having the work session on the current or the next biennium's budget as to whether we're going to continue those programs then.
Further objections? Senator Westman?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1041 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westman moves Senate Bill 1041 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? Oh. Representative Morgan. Mr. Britton.
With that, Madam Chair, I'm going to leave and turn it over to Deborah Manthe,
okay.
Who will talk about Senate Bill 5525.
Thank you. Okay. Well,
question, Mr. Mayor.
Madam Chair, was uncertain at looking at the public plan work session in the view of the time, if you just want to open a work session, if you work for Monday. I know the agency has brought written responses to the questions that the subcommittee proposed, and I do not want to bring forward in the year.
I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 5525.
Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. As you recall from yesterday, Senate Bill 5525 is the budget bill for the long-term care ombudsman. Madam Chair, since there's only two policy packages, I have one small technical adjustment. I thought I'd just run through the budget and the performance measures, kind of like we did with the other budgets I brought forward, and then I could entertain questions on the whole thing, if that's okay with you.
Proceed.
All right. As you said, there are two policy packages. Package 101 is titled Essential Data Support. As you recall, the agency's requesting one part-time clerical person to deal with the workload associated with their reporting changes. They've been trying to deal with this workload using volunteers and temporary and limited duration staff. Adding a permanent staff will improve consistency, accuracy, and timeliness. The legislative fiscal office is recommending approval, and we have a couple technical adjustments which are identified in the write-up. One is to reduce the flexible benefit budget. The system automatically churns a full-time benefit. The agency will only be paying a part-time benefit. We've also recommended eliminating the unemployment budget. They haven't used this budget for unemployment costs in the last four biennium. Instead, they've been using it to fund the temps and the limited duration, so I thought it was a reasonable offset. So, again, we recommend approval of a total funds package of $37,050, one position, 0.50 FTE. Package 102 is the request for two deputy, have to look at the state long-term care ombudsman positions. Again, it would allow the agency to take on more volunteers. I think their estimate was once fully implemented, they could take on roughly about 60 more volunteers. And the idea behind this is then they could reduce the time it took to close a non-abuse complaint, and it increased their ability to get out and visit facilities. Our recommendation is to approve one position, and I know that's disappointing. That is, however, reconciles with the amount of money that's in the co-chair's budget. So the revised package amount would be $156,413, total funds, one position, 0.75 FTE.
Discussion? Madam Chair. Senator Gorley.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and vote for this today, but I want to say this for the record, that the recommendation for staff is inadequate. We heard in testimony that the needs are such that what's really required are four people, at least four people, to meet the needs, the current needs of this vulnerable population. And I would like the report that goes to the full Ways and Means Committee to reflect the testimony that we heard about the inadequacy of staffing to meet current needs, so that the co-chairs and the full committee are fully aware that while we may wind up approving one position in a couple of minutes, that that's inadequate. That is inadequate.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Boone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think actually Senator Gordley is much more eloquent than I would have put it. I agree wholeheartedly and would like, well, I will go ahead and vote for this at this point, but I would like for us to put this high on our list for more money at the later date when we're looking at our 2% fix.
Further discussion? Representative Cortez?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am not able to vote for this. And I apologize if I haven't had a chance to talk with folks ahead of time, but we are missing an opportunity to maximize our volunteers in the state. We have not meeting the needs of our folks in our long-term care facilities, and I would like to see it as a possible something we can come back to if we can find more money. But this time I feel like I need to have my no vote on the record of saying this is something that is not appropriate. I think they should at least have the two FTE, and I can't support the recommendation.
I did hear the committee yesterday well. I have asked that this second piece with the second person would go on my high priority list for add backs. And so I promise you that I am going to be looking very, very hard to see if we can get the second position, because I do realize that we're woefully inadequately getting enough staff people to work with this this area. So I will be looking very strongly at that piece.
Thank you, ma'am.
Further comments? Are there any objections? Oh, you didn't give me a motion. What's that?
Madam Chair, would you like a motion?
Are we doing all the packages together? I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Is it package one package at a time? How are we doing this?
She did both. Did you do both packages?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have a few. I have a technical adjustment if you wanted to move.
No, that's all right. Please understand that what is rushing me so much today, we're losing two members. And I'm trying to respect their time and their need to leave. And so I'm pushing you a little fast. So my apologies for that. I'll calm down. Senator Bates and then Representative Morgan.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I will follow your lead and allow you I was wondering if we could just move the entire budget after RFOs had their entire recommendations, both for key performance measures and for policy packages, and move the entire budget at one time. Will that be acceptable to you?
That will be acceptable, and
thank
we'll hold on. Representative Morgan.
I was going to suggest that we do the whole thing and do one vote on it also, but I do want to voice I have the very same concerns that were expressed by Representative Kotek and by Senator Gordley. I think that this agency takes an extremely small investment from the state and multiplies it many, 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 many times over. And the work that these people do is... It's so critical to the trust that our seniors have in their care system. And I would be much happier if we took this budget back and fixed it before we sent it out.
Right.
And so my vote is going to reflect that.
Okay. Representative Garrard and then Representative Matheson.
Madam Chair, I'll join my colleagues in that vote.
Okay. Representative Matheson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to add my concurrence with the other members and express appreciation to you for identifying this as a high-priority add-back. I'm going to refer to something that we received in testimony yesterday, which struck me as extremely important. I'm quoting, "In the 15 years that I have volunteered, the range of issues has increased dramatically from cold food and lost clothing to more complex issues of guardian conservatorships, family conflict, pain management, end of life, eviction, financial exploitation," and it goes on, "medication errors, quality of care, and so forth. This is a very critical function performed by wonderful people. So thank you."
The committee will stand at ease for a few minutes.
And Constitution.
second. I will make a commitment to you that, like I had said before, that we will add this to our high priority list, and the seat of my conscience is always to my second right, Senator Gortley, which will certainly not let me forget that. And I will work very hard in talking with the co-chairs to add this one position back. With that, Senator Wesley?
Madam Chair, I move the LFO recommendation for Senate Bill 5525 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Wesley moves House Bill 5525 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Objections? Representative Kotek, Representative Grodd, Representative Morgan. The motion is passed. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
No?
The motion is not passed.
No, it's not.
No.
What I will... The committee will stand at ease for a minute. Representative
Kotek, make a motion for reconsideration. Madam Chair, I would like to make a motion for reconsideration of Senate Bill 5525.
Representative Kotek wants to reconsider the motion by which House Bill 5525 failed. Are there any objections? Representative Morgan, motion passes. Representative Kotek.
Oh, I'm sorry. I made Jeff say the wrong thing. I'm fine with this.
Okay. Senator Wesley.
Madam Chair, I move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5525 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Wesley moves House Bill 5525 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Objections? Representative Morgan. Motion passes. Thank you very much. I'd like to open. I'd like to, Mr. Walker is here.
I think they lost the
I'd like to open public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1034.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1034 will change the fee structure for the Board of Nursing on the Certified Nursing Assistants Certification. It will raise the cap that is currently in statute from $45 to $75. And I see Pat Miles, the business manager for the Board of Nursing, is in the audience and if she would like to come up and give a quick explanation.
Ms. Mayo?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Pat Miles. I am the business manager for the Oregon State Board of Nursing. Excuse me. Senate Bill 1034 has one minor change to our statute. It changes a cap on CNA fees. That cap affects initial CNA certification for people by endorsement through means other than by an examination process, and also the biennial renewal fee, and it limits it to $40. That is usually matched by federal revenues. Those monies go to federal, come through DHS, and we are sharing the pot with other Medicare and Medicaid long-term care needs. So the federal pot is shrinking. In our budget, we have $100,000 worth of CNA costs that will not get federal match, so we have a need to increase fees. The only fee we can currently increase by law is the CNA by exam fee. What that means is we get an inequity of a fee charging. If the less than 6,000 people who apply for examination are paying or basically subsidizing the people, the over 16,000 people who are renewing or endorsing it to the state. Our wish is to address that inequity in our fee structure through this. The $75 amount is the new cap. It was agreed upon in discussions with the Oregon Healthcare Association. We discussed this with them, and we that will enable us to work through normal Senate Bill 333 fees processes with you for a few bienniums before we would have to touch this again.
Question? If you recall that I had a meeting with the association with Mr. Carlson, and they were perfectly fine with this piece. Also, is in the governor's budget for $100,000, but we just wanted to, remember I told you we'll be coming back with a bill so it can be cleaner as opposed to going the backdoor approach into their budget. Okay. Questions, comments, discussion?
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1034 with a due pass recommendation to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland moves Senate Bill 1034 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections. Oh, discussion.
You got it.
Okay.
See, I did something wrong with this.
Sorry, that close.
Sorry. Discussion. No discussion?
Well, I would just like to voice my objection. I think that these are folks that are way down on the low end of the salary food chain, and raising rates on them is not a good thing to do, and I'll be a no vote on that basis.
Okay, Representative.
I think, well, if I'm not mistaken, I think the industry talked about picking up the increase.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. So it's really not a cost to the CNAs themselves.
Further discussion? Objections? Representative Morgan. Motion passes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Committee dismissed.